Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Stephen Goldsmith, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations. A critical part of modernizing city government is saving every penny by reducing unfunded mandates such as pension or healthcare benefits. The city's cost, I think you alluded to this earlier, in 2001 was $1.5 billion. This year, it's projected, I believe, to be close to $7 billion, and then next year, $8 billion. Would you elaborate on the city's efforts to work with Albany to reform the pension system?
These pensions are not affordable. They're just not affordable. And we have a good workforce and they deserve a fair break. But if there's not enough money, there's not enough money. And if you work 20 years and you get a pension for, depends on your category, you could get one for 40 years after that. Mm-hmm. So you work 20, you get paid for 60. Full health care at 100%. And a pension that's decent. It's not that there's not a tax base to support it. Cities, including New York City, are subject to some rules of elasticity that suggest that you can't raise taxes forever and not evict your tax base from your city. People will take the people who are wealthiest are those that are most mobile and they'll pick up their money and run. So essentially then, if your tax base is at risk and your cost structure is too high, something has to give. And I think some moderation in the health care and pension benefits going forward would right-size this. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the unions and their leadership care about the city. I never meet with somebody that says, I don't care about the city. They say, look, I have a job to represent my members, you know, and if you have a good idea, then we'll be happy to talk to you about it. So it's not in their interest to see the finances of the city collapse. So now we have to get those interests aligned. And the curiosity in New York City government, as your question indicates, is that pensions are essentially set at the state level and imposed on the city. Mm-hmm. So we negotiate the pay. They impose the pension. And that doesn't work because today, in many of the job classifications in New York City, the fringe benefits, meaning pension and health care, are 100% of the salary. So the salary is only half of the compensation package. So we negotiate half and the state mandates half, and that just doesn't work.
I was wondering, because you mentioned earlier that the workforce itself is a valuable asset. And what are you doing to reform and improve the city's civil service system?
Yeah, we're in this kind of no-win situation, I think, where both labor and management loses because neither one trusts the other. New York City has a very, very elaborate civil service system, which then is subservient to a state civil service system. So we've got rules upon rules and layers upon layers, and it's just really bad. And so you would want workers to have more discretion. You'd want to have broad banding. You'd want to have performance play a part in promotion, right? Today, I saw this thing from our call center operator. He's really a great guy, and he really cares about performance. And he showed me, you know, the level of satisfaction of workers in one of his shifts that went way down. I said, what did you do wrong? And he said, well, I didn't do anything wrong. We have a new supervisor. I said, well, how'd you make such a bad mistake? He said, I didn't make a bad mistake. I knew she was going to be a bad supervisor. I didn't want her to be my supervisor. She was bad before she got promoted. Her colleagues didn't like her, but she scored the top on the test, and I didn't have any choice. Right? So performance has to be a part of promotion, and as does experience. And it's not just who can take the test the best and the ability to evaluate and terminate based on merit and hire and have broad banding. It's not fair to the 90-whatever% of workers who work well that the person next to them doesn't work very much. I have another one who came in late 55 times before we were allowed to fire him. 55 times. A call center operator, 55 times. So those are part of our civil service changes.
All right. So you've mentioned performance vis-a-vis employee performance and the importance of that. I want to switch it a little bit and talk about measuring program performance, which is critical for identifying what works and how to best invest limited resources. Would you tell us about the city's very robust approach to managing for performance, and how can the city use analytics to take real-time performance data to the next level?
Well, Mayor Bloomberg has set up a system that measures everything. We have a group that reports to me that is relentless about performance measurement. We have report cards. As you know, we work in a bullpen. There's a large TV screen, and across it flashes every 30 seconds a different performance metric so that everybody, deputy mayors and the like, see them. There we have widgets and icons on the desktop so they have to see their own agencies. And we have red and green scorecards, and so we got a lot of attention. So then we employ performance monitors in my office. We call scouts, and they drive the streets. They evaluate the cleanliness and the smoothness of the streets, and they report back. So we have report cards. It's not just agency self-reporting. So it has to be the most comprehensive in the country. So it's a great start. The problem is it's not sufficient in and of itself. It's absolutely critical and enormously more than I ever had when I was mayor of Indianapolis. But that data ought to then get pushed into an analytics center from which we can identify the causes of the problems. So now we're tracking the results and we're tracking the problems. We do have the country's best and biggest 311 call center. We have enormous amounts of data there. We have kind of data from social networking tools. We have information from the scorecards. But to the extent that information comes together and leads us to discoveries about what causes a problem, what causes a type of person to become homeless, what causes a person to fall at a particular place in the street, which causes a kid to get beat up in their home, then those analytics should drive performance like the conversation we had about the fire department. And that's the next stage.
Well, I'd like to talk about innovation, which you alluded to just now, and it's in particular the New York City Big Apps competition as sort of the segue. Would you tell us more about that competition, but more particularly, how is the city taking citizen engagement beyond public dialogues to co-creation?
Well, co-creation and co-production is where we want to go. Your question is really a good one. So New York City, like Washington, D.C., has a Big Apps program. Big Apps program is to say to the world, here's our day to write an app and help us improve the city. And it's a really good program. So we have a Big Apps program. We have a transparency program. We have a 311 program. We have blank programs. But the goal is to bring those together. And so, for example, recently we made available to the public generally and to community boards and neighborhood activists in particular real-time 311 data by the number and types of complaints geocoded. So if this is your retail corner, you can see every complaint we received, whether it's open, whether it's closed, how many there were. And the goal is not just – it's helpful to have that information so that people can hold us accountable. But in the sense of co-production of public services, you would hope that somebody who's deeply knowledgeable about that corner, that neighborhood, more knowledgeable than we are by definition because they live or work there, would say – you guys just need to wake up. That left turn signal is 30 seconds too short, and people are going to keep getting hit there until you change it, right? So I'm hoping to unlock a fair number of solutions by connecting big apps, transparency, open data in a way, and social networking tools in a way that produces discoveries.
So the Web 2.0 has ushered in a new age in which public goods, as you're alluding to, are built privately. What lessons does the web provide government on how to harness the private sector?
Well, I think there's an interesting struggle going on that I don't want to call it old guard and new guard because I'm probably old guard. But to some extent, we went from no recognition of social networking tools. I'm so old I was involved in kind of 1.0 where we stood up e-government like in 1990. Indianapolis was one of the first to do it. We didn't do it very well at the time because we were too early. But at any rate. So that was a big deal, and people finally kind of caught on to that, right? I mean, it took actually longer than one would think. Now, 2.0, many in government see it as a communications tool, which it is. But that's really insufficient, right? What you want to think about is that we have developed very professional civil servants. And very professional civil servants tend to think that if they get into a dark room and think really good thoughts, they'll figure out the solution to somebody else's problem. And they do that with the best of intentions and using their professional training. The difficulty, of course, is that people who lead lives often have better insights into what would solve the problem for them than we do about them, or at least that the interchange of that would be good. So I think where we are trying to head now in New York City government, hopefully as a leader, would be to say social networking is a way to crowdsource solutions to problems. And that literally is crowdsourcing, right? We have to be prepared for people to insult us online. And any of us who are involved in kind of the Twitter world, right? Or, you know, we know a fair number of the notes I get are, you know, why don't you quit sort of notes, right? But the number of actually kind of just painfully obnoxious notes is relatively small, and the rest of them are pretty good. So we just have to tell civil servants that there's an attitude, I think, that says if I don't set up a online interactive crowdsourcing tool, if I don't have an online Twitter, if I don't have an active Twitter account, then I can't play host to people insulting me or criticizing me. Mm-hmm. That's as if they're going to not badmouth you if you don't provide the form. So we just need to get over the fact that these forms are going to attract really unkind comments, but they're going to be a minority, and most of the comments are going to be constructive criticisms or constructively compliments, and that we need to engage the public in a realistic way. And that's what we're trying to do now, even with respect to cost-benefit analyses of regulations. I'm going to ask restaurants and businesses, and every time we promulgate a rule, a proposed rule, for the city of New York, it ought to be crowdsourced for cost-benefit analysis.
Wonderful idea. And that really does go into my next question about what other ways is the city using or exploring the use of innovative technologies or innovative programs to meet mission, promote transparency and collaboration?
Well, we have a vast array of technology initiatives. Some on the social networking side using online innovation tools, blogs and the like to break through the levels of bureaucracy so that, you know, if I can't penetrate physically the lines of communication up and down the hierarchy, I'm going to penetrate it electronically. I'm going to poke holes in the hierarchy with little electronic holes in the hierarchy and ask, you know, I have some visual of folks trapped at the bottom. Maybe there's some version of kind of the Chilean miners kind of hosting their ideas up to the top through these kind of electronic holes through the hierarchy. And we are doing the same, about to launch in early April, a very significant interactive community-based tool to help us with neighborhood-based environmental solutions, which will be exciting. And then New York City has a proprietary private wireless network for employees. And the reason that's important is because it allows us to have sufficient security to do some very interesting things on that system. We've recently stood up electronic water bills. So not only do we get your meter readings through our wireless system, but we now get them, you know, real time all the time. And if you have a leak in your front yard or you have a leaky toilet, we can know it. And you can subscribe to our tool for free and we'll tell you, go check on your house, right? So, but then that will evolve to, you're asking me questions today, obviously to me, not to people listening from your iPad, right? So we envision a world where every employee will have iPad or whatever the one of the day is. Certain categories. And that's not just that you're going to get your information on that, you're going to get your decision support systems on that. It's going to tell you how to operate and where you need to go and how you have an electrical issue and you're the electrical inspector, what do you look for next sort of thing. So I think the future is a future of digits, and the digits will unlock enormous amount of value.
You've alluded earlier to the environmental solution around co-creation. And New York City has one of the most comprehensive sustainability plans that they put out in 2007. I had the pleasure of interviewing one of your commissioners, Cass Holloway, and he outlined a little bit of what was going on last year. Would you tell us more about the key initiatives that you're pursuing in this area?
Well, we have a Plan YC document that is a terrific document, preceded me, plan for a sustainability initiatives in almost every area, whether it's water, air, the like. We're now writing a new chapter for that. It'll be out around Earth Day. And then looking more intensively at green infrastructure, permeable surfaces, cleaner water, better energy conservation, cleaner air, and how every aspect of government feeds into various of those initiatives. Its advantages is pervasive and comprehensive.
What does the future hold for the city of New York? We will ask Stephen Goldsmith, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.